Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market creates win-win partnerships with our suppliers, and we love to tell their stories. Red Jacket Orchards is a family-owned farm in the Finger Lakes of the Hudson Valley that's grown for decades alongside Whole Foods Market. Their apples, pears, ciders, and juices are some of New York's best and seasonal staples for any kitchen. Come have a taste in one of our six Manhattan locations.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, where every week at 11 o'clock, I, Mitchell Davis, your host and vice president of the James Beard Foundation, talk about taste with interesting taste makers from New York and from around the country and around the world. And today we have two taste makers in and of their own right. Oh, they're giving me a funny look that they're not taste makers, but in fact, they are arbiters of a particular type of taste that we're going to get into. We're talking today about some of my favorite subjects, ice cream and gays. And we're here on that subject with Doug Quint and Brian Petroff, the big gay ice cream guys or people. How do I refer to you appropriately? You are big gay ice cream, period.
You and you.
Yeah. Welcome, Doug. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
We are.
Can taste makers have no taste? I mean, I think we're fairly tasteless people. This is going to be
intriguing.
Speak
for yourself.
Well, that's a topic I want to talk about. Yeah, we're going to get to the unicorn. But first, let me remind our listeners that you can dial in your questions about ice cream, about homosexuality, about Bea Arthur, or perhaps classical music. And you'll find out why I've said all those things by calling us here at Heritage Radio at 718-497-2128. You can also email your questions to info@heritageradionetwork.com.
This is going to be bizarre.
Good Lord, those are broad topics.
Let's start with the big gay ice cream truck and how you guys got, where you came from and how you've gone from a corner near Union Square, New York, to the pages of every food magazine in America.
Well, I just wanted something weird to do a couple of summers ago. I was finishing up my doctorate at CUNY and doing a lot of work up in Boston.
Doctorate in what?
Bassoon performance, of course. Everyone has one of those.
The fagotto, of course.
Yeah, the fagotto. And so I thought, after I passed my comps, maybe I would just stick around New York, not go off to music festivals, and just find some oddball job. And I knew that I didn't want to work a counter job or be a waiter. I wanted to do something weird, like maybe be an exterminator's apprentice or something like that. And I logged onto Facebook one day, and my friend's status message said, if you want to drive an ice cream truck this summer, get in touch with me. I can help hook you up with one. And I turned to Brian, and I said, I think this is about the weirdest thing I could possibly do, is drive an ice cream truck. And he said, yep, you should do it.
Much like we're sitting here today, modern couples, both on our laptops, the TV on.
What were you doing at the time, Brian?
I have been in corporate HR, corporate training, and event planning, meeting planning for about 15 years. And I actually was doing that for the first 3 years of the truck. I only left that in July of this year.
Oh, okay. We'll get to that. So
once we realized we were going to have an ice cream truck, we started thinking about all the fun things you can put on soft serve. And all the ice cream trucks have exactly the same menu. It's all just rainbow sprinkles and butterscotch. And so we thought, well, maybe we'll do a special every day or something like that. And before long, Brian had drawn up a menu that, you know, we had about 8 or 10 items that we were going to be carrying most days. And along with the menu, we decided we needed our own name so that people could find this truck. And so I started a Facebook group and rallied my friends behind the cause. And I didn't have a name for the truck. I didn't want to call it Doug's Ice Cream Truck. So I just
that would be just normal.
far too dull and vain.
For him, yes.
Yeah. Yes, okay.
So as sort of a placeholder, I called the Facebook group the Big Gay Ice Cream Truck. And it turned out to be so absurd that people just started joining the group so it would show up in their feeds that they were a fan of Big Gay Ice Cream Truck.
Funny.
Just like being a fan of unicorns or something like that that doesn't exist, or Pegasus.
They do exist. What are you talking about?
No, I don't want to talk about that yet. We'll get there. Yeah, and it took off on its own. Yeah,
and so you you went to Mr. Softy Depot and you picked up a truck and you drove to a corner and started.
I got a retired Mr. Softy truck with all the
branded
that evil conehead guy wiped off of it, and we started to stick our own posters over the truck and put up our own menus.
Yeah, I mean, this was very, very ghetto. I mean, it was like checking out a truck,
right?
Hauling our stuff onto it, slapping our temporary logo on it, and Doug would be on it all day long. While I was at work, I'd come down and give him a break from dinner. Then I'd go and prepare all the toppings and everything that we wanted to do for the next day while he took the truck back to the depot, dropped it off, cleaned it. Because we never knew if it was going to be the same truck the next day or anything. So we were beholden to the depot in terms of what we were able to get. And
these trucks are sketchy.
Yeah, oof. For the most part, it was
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we had a few weeks ago, we had David Weber, who's the president of the New York Food Truck mm-hmm. Association and also has been in food trucks selling dumplings. And he was talking about how it can be pretty rough out there on the streets of Manhattan fighting for territory. And I imagine that with a big rainbow and gay ice cream truck thing, that perhaps you might have been a target for some of
Not so much. A target for a lot of fun people to come and find me, really.
I mean, ice cream trucks have their own kind of rules and not camaraderie, but...
Well, there are probably a half dozen ice cream truck depots, and these guys own 10 or 20 trucks each. And ice cream trucks in Manhattan don't drive around. They go to a spot and they stay there. So all of these guys know who's going to be where, what days. So there's not as much jockeying for positions with soft serve ice cream trucks. Not the same
unless
way
you go to Columbus Circle.
Yeah, okay. Then it turns into warfare. Do you see the video of one ice cream
guy beating this out of another guy?
We're not it's over on YouTube. The airwaves. You can say that word. It's on YouTube. Okay.
Yeah, he clobbers another driver who's on his turf with kids, standing around. It's really, really wild.
Nice. Yeah. Right.
Well, okay. We knew we didn't want to be that.
So since this is a show about taste, let's talk a little bit about those specials that you created, because I think almost more than the rainbows and the idea that you were just two chatty, and then occasionally another chatty guy in a truck with a line around the block. You've put together some things, as you said, that aren't normally on soft serve cones, not the chocolate dip. So, like, where, how, what's that about? What's the inspiration, and why is it? Are they named for B. Arthur and all those sorts of things?
Well, I mean, we both have a love of food. We both eat out a lot. We both traveled a lot for our jobs. I would do meetings around the country. Doug was doing a lot of international travel for performances. So it was one of those things that just seemed like, duh, you had to do this. You had to kind of figure out what you loved, what was missing from trucks, and bring those two together. So I just started thinking back through where I'd eaten, the stuff I'd liked, and it all kind of started at, for me at least, with working on the menu, was a particular pizzeria in Mill Valley, California.
Oh, really?
I think it's called Piccoline Pizza. Piccolo Pizza.
Okay.
And they actually had a soft serve machine in there. And, they put olive oil and sea salt right on there like we do. And that got me thinking the sky's the limit in a way. So Doug and I would just kind of wander the stores of Manhattan and look and see what was out there, go to Calustian's or Fairway or, wherever it was, and just kind of get a sense of
We walked the aisles and we realized how many great ice cream toppings there are in grocery stores, and none of them are where the ice cream toppings are located.
Yeah.
I mean, those are just, pink sweet syrups and crap, really.
Right.
Yeah. But if you go over to where the balsamic vinegars are, there's...
Interesting.
You'll find Saba, and it tastes great on ice cream. So we started having a couple of taste testing parties with friends of ours, and we just sit all this stuff down. And it wasn't even just, do you like olive oil on sea salt? It was, here are eight olive oils.
Really?
Yeah. So we were very picky about kind of the selection. I mean, but we also love very, kind of lowbrow, trashy stuff, too. So we would put trick cereal on it because it was...
Yeah, we have no problem grinding up cookies and putting those on if we want to.
But there's nothing more beautiful than a vanilla cone rolled in Trick cereal. It's so...
It's very queer.
It's the queerest thing you'll ever see.
Okay. So what are... besides the tricks... Here we are in sort of the heart of this heritage, local, seasonal... restaurant Roberta's in Brooklyn, where I think they grow everything. Maybe they have a Trix tree in the back, I don't know.
Oh really?
Yeah, you know,
I think Trix grows on bushes.
What is the season for Trix anyway? What are some of the classic, what are some of the best sellers, the ones that you just will never be able to take off the menu, and what are some other things coming down the pike?
Well, you mentioned the B. Arthur, and
which is?
It's a vanilla cone with dulce de leche that we both put on the outside of the cone, but also inject inside it and put down in the ice cream and down into the cone, and then we roll it in ground up vanilla wafer cookies. And
yeah, it's delicious. Yeah. The first time we did that, we just crushed the cookies in the bag on the truck. I think I smashed them with a shake cup, and they all fell off the thing. And the first name for that cone was just the ugly thing. Make another ugly thing.
We never named anything the first summer, so that all started the second summer.
After a few months, when we started grinding vanilla wafers in a Cuisinart, we felt very, very haughty-taughty.
And so you picked an obscure television Broadway actress. I mean, not obscure. Obscure to probably the people listening at home. Who was
to the Straits?
To the Straits, and to anyone under the age of, I don't know, 65.
It's very shocking when people come in and ask for the cone and ask for a Bay Arthur or a Bia Arthur. Yeah. And I really want to send them to the back of the line with their smartphones and tell them to prepare an essay.
For me, Bay Arthur is my nails on the chalkboard.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being stabbed.
But no, that name came about through Twitter. It was one of the kind of interactions that Doug had, and he did a little Twitter contest to say, we've got this cone, we don't have a name for it, you know, what should we name it? And somebody had suggested the Golden Girl, because it's kind of golden. And we took that one step further. B. Arthur had just passed away within the last few months when this was happening. And we said, well, let's just name it after her.
Yeah, she left a bunch of money in her will to the Ali Forney Center for LGBT youth.
Oh, really?
So it just seemed like it all clicked.
A nice thing to do.
Yeah. We also named the Choink Witch, which is the...
Chocolate bacon ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, it's chocolate cookies, chocolate ice cream, and a layer of bacon marmalade. And we named that on... we tried to name it on Twitter. It was just called the bacon ice cream sandwich, and I asked for a name, and a guy was insisting that we call it the pig cream. Yeah, so I sort of avoided that contest and named it the Choink Witch.
But let's talk about this, because we actually have had this conversation before. There is a social media component to what you're doing, to the whole truck phenomenon, I think, in some way, that is participatory and also, you know, created perhaps, I think you would admit, since I follow you and we communicate sometimes on Twitter, this a world beyond the corner or even the shop, and we'll get to the shop later. I mean, what role do you think, how has that helped or contributed to your experience?
I think it's... Well, I will say this. Right before we started, neither of us had a Twitter account. We only created a Twitter account for the truck.
We would never be on there with personal accounts.
No.
And, never.
But what we realized right away is that, you know, with one truck at the corner of Broadway and 17th Street, granted, yes, it's in Union Square, and you do get a lot of people, but in the grand scheme of things, there are a lot of people who may find out about you through the press, magazines or TV or whatever, but they have no way of kind of connecting with you because they'll never come to New York. They'll never actually taste your ice cream or anything like that. So that's what we, at least that's how I saw Twitter and as a way of giving people who may never actually come to the truck a virtual experience, if you will. They resonate with the brand Big A, and they kind of pick up and know exactly what you're doing and what your daily specials are and what your flavors are, and it's almost like they're kind of tasting at osmosis.
They're playing along.
Into a zeitgeist. We're going to take a short break and we'll get back and we'll talk more about that, and I want to hear about some more of your flavors, both classics and coming up.
It's about the mischief.
And welcome back to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. If you didn't know it before the break and you were listening to the words, you know now that we're talking to the guys behind Big Gay Ice Cream. You can call and ask questions. Call us here at Heritage Radio Network at 718-497-2128 or send us your questions at info@heritageradionetwork.com. Not a lot of trucks or even individual ice cream shops have their own jingle. Tell us about the Big Gay Ice Cream
they
song.
They do have their own jingle, the Mr. Softy.
Well, of course. Yeah. But that,
they have Pop Goes the Weasel.
Right.
I would like to scold you for fading out right before the dirty line.
We'll blame Jack, the producer, for that.
We always wanted something, our own identifying music. And the first time we were on the radio was on 1010 Winds with John Montone, the guy who does sort of wacky new item of the day. And he was really upset we didn't have any music. So I found a cha-cha version of Glowworm. So that was the first thing to be associated with the truck. And later that summer, the second summer.
I think you talked to Jane about it the first summer.
That's right.
But the
middle of the first summer, when things started to hit big and we started to do some radio and podcasts, I called Jane Weedland, who's a friend of mine. She's the guitarist in the Go-Go's and the woman who wrote Our Lips Are Sealed and a bunch of their other hits. And I said, Jane, why don't you come up with a song for us? You know, maybe it'll end up licensed somewhere, but you know, you're twisted. Write a song about our ice cream truck. And she said, oh, okay, I'll get around to it someday. And about 2 months later, I got home at 3 a.m. after returning the ice cream truck, and I had a demo version in the mail, in my
Amazing.
Email.
That yeah. is so great.
And we just kind of sat there flipping out. The first concert I ever went to was the Go-Go's when I was 13 in 1984, and then Jane wrote us a song.
Amazing.
And it actually ended up on iTunes on Doug's birthday last summer. Not this past summer, 2010.
So people can actually go to iTunes still and buy that song?
Hell yeah. Yeah. Big Gay Ice Cream song on iTunes by Jane Weedland.
And Amazon. Rhapsody and all of those.
Yeah.
Wherever the kids are buying their tunes.
All right, let's go back to flavors. We've got the B. Arthur. Give us some other ideas you have worked out or are working with that you think we might not associate with ice cream, but that you think are just great combinations.
Well, the great thing about having a shop now is the ability to do so much more than we could on the truck. And not only for space, but also in terms of equipment and just the time that you have,
experimentation.
Yep. The people around you to bounce ideas off of, the staff are great. And
so how long have you had the shop?
The shop's opened Labor Day weekend.
Great.
3 months or so. Yeah.
On East 7th Street in Manhattan.
Yeah. Okay. So, and also, it's great because now we've made the decision that this is our full-time gig. So, so knowing that, we put much more kind of thought and time into everything that we do. So we've been developing our own sauces in-house, our own spicy brewed hot chocolate.
Oh, wow.
I abandoned doing milkshakes on the truck because they were too time-consuming, and now we're really developing an extensive menu of milkshakes, and that's a blast.
My favorite milkshake is our ginger curry shake. So we do... It's not too savory or anything like that. It's just a nice little mild curry with some sweet ginger syrup and ice cream. We have a Tang creamsicle shake.
And we are doing some specialty, our own special flavors of soft serve, too.
Yes.
Right now, one of the ice cream machines is running beet soft serve on one side and coffee soft serve on the other, which makes me laugh because really you could do a twist cone that's beet and coffee. Which we wanted to call it Breakfast in the Ukraine.
Awesome. Or World War, right, during World War II.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they couldn't afford, right.
Shockingly strange.
The bunker special.
So I know this is a weird topic to go to, and we might be stretching things here, but we got to get to the gay thing and to talk about like what that has contributed to your incredible proliferation, I would say. You know, when I'm sitting down in a flight to Los Angeles on a Delta airline and I open the pages and there is the big gay ice cream truck in Sky magazine, I turned to Nate, my partner, was just like, I can't believe this. It's
yeah,
amazing.
Neither could we.
So, I mean, it's awesome. And you know, in this post Will and Grace world or something, like what, I mean, talk to me about it.
it's really strange because it's completely... it was just done as a lark,
right.
You know. We wanted to call the truck Big Gay Ice Cream Truck because the menu seemed kind of queer to us and because I was going to go out and be really, really happy, unlike most ice cream truck guys. So we wanted... It was, you know, people would say, is this truck... is it because you're gay or is it because you're happy? And I would say, it's whatever, you know.
It's, right.
It's all just, of the
it's
above.
It's just that. And so...
It is funny, though, the idea that people question the sexual identity of the product or the truck.
I'm so tired.
They walk up and ask, so is the ice cream gay? Is the truck gay? Are they both gay? Are you gay? Will I be gay? I'm just like...
Amazing.
Well, you just stop thinking about it and right. have fun with yeah. it. And maybe that's why it's so approachable, because it is very non-threatening. I mean, we try to... I mean, you can't be louder than our
my logo. Best, you know, some of my friends are gay. Some of my ice cream cones are gay. It's sort of
how they are.
Subversive way into
people,
a conversation,
exactly.
into human rights, into all sorts of things.
People tried to politicize us and co-opt us for different movements, and we've really avoided that. We just want to be our strange ice cream truck, and we don't want to have an agenda other than to have fun with ice cream. That's it.
To a certain extent. I mean, it would be wrong to say that we don't see that there is a perception out there, a
right.
message, whatever that message may be, however that person interprets it.
You did paint a very large unicorn on the wall of your shop.
Yeah.
That was not a straight decision exactly. You know?
No, Doug has...
you know, one of the other things that I really wanted, though, was a Minotaur with B. Arthur's head on it. I will have that.
That
in
will be the
someday.
Next shop's bureau, by the way.
Just gross.
You heard it here. Not only does the wall have a unicorn on it, but the unicorn has 6,000 Swarovski crystals on it. So,
so big sparkly gay ice cream.
Exactly. Shop. Most, you know, midlife crisis involve convertibles. Ours involve.
Unicorns
and ice cream.
Swarovski crystals.
All hand applied.
I told you this was a show about taste, and we didn't say it was going to be good or bad.
When it comes also to the color scheme to our shop, we started looking at paint chips, and I think we went with a bunch of colors. Tiggerific, Invitation to a Princess, all of the color names.
We ended up going with Disney's... paint line, yeah.
Yeah, for little kids' brooms.
Except for the gray. Most of the walls are this gray that we found, and the name of it's Anonymous. So I like this. I like the idea of you've got all these Disney colors, and then you've got, like, a Craigslist ad, you know,
right.
mixed in there, too.
Well, even that speaks... I mean, we're in such a funny moment where, in some ways, our tastes have become so sophisticated that we are just ripe for being made fun of, you know, or our perception of what our tapes portray about us is has become this, you know, the Prada-ization, the wallpaperization. You can't, you know, I just went into we were looking at some real estate recently, and I walked in and I felt like Ian Schrager had just moved into the lobby, and it was just an ugly apartment building, you know. And so in some ways, the only place to go from there is rainbows and kittens and Disney colors.
I think.
Ooh, I like the idea of winged kittens, too.
Winged
kittens. Winged kittens.
Interesting.
Ooh. I think there's an island off the coast of New Zealand where they might have those.
Somebody email
what are
me
they in season?
Somebody email me and remind me about winged kittens later, because I'm going to forget that. I've got to hold on to that.
Luckily, this is archived as a podcast on iTunes, and you can always get it. You were about to say something, Brian?
No. I think I was going to say there's something strange about... It was our first four walls, basically, and neither of us have owned an apartment or house. You know, we've just been renting in New York City the whole time. So it was the first time that I felt like I could just throw caution to the wind and it was your space, do whatever the hell I wanted to do with the place. And luckily, we both have very similar tastes, if you will. And
I had a lot of fun kicking down a wall in the store. That was a good time.
Sure. Well, there is something. I was just talking about this in a very different context, but I once had the fortune of interviewing Paul Bocuse about Nouvelle Cuisine, and one of the greatest French chefs of all time. And he, when I asked him what the most important aspect of Nouvelle Cuisine was for him, I expected something to come about the food or the, you know, the sauce on the bottom or less butter, all this sort of stuff. And he said it was that the chefs could put their name on the restaurant, which meant that they could do whatever they wanted, that they were the owner entrepreneurs and they weren't working for the maitre d' or the restaurateur. And so that freed them up artistically to actually not just serve the classic French dishes or to actually insert their personality, sort of the creation of the artiste in the kitchen. And in some ways, that's what you're saying, like in your space, it's your space.
And I think we're at a really good time in our development. Right now, we're not so big that we need to worry about market research. And we come up with stuff that we really like, and we try selling it. And if people buy it, we keep selling it. You know, if they don't buy it, we take it off the menu. But it's our stuff right now. It's not part of a focus group.
And I think everything that we do is always... The word that always has to stay there is fun. The one thing we realized is that there's nothing more... there's no food that's more fun than ice cream in our mind.
Soft serve on top of that even more.
Exactly, exactly. And so this is our interpretation of fun. We want... and we really see that resonate with the customers who come in or even walk by. You know, when we were under construction, after we put the sign up, but we still were about a month away from opening... people, we would hear them and watch them just mouth. Like, you can't walk by our sign and not repeat it to yourself. You
know,
and then chuckle over it. And everybody who comes into the shop, most everybody, I would say, seems to have great time. And they have that reaction. They have to have their picture taken with the logo or the unicorn, along with getting... an ice cream cone or a sundae or something like that. So
occasionally somebody is confused because they want it to be more highbrow than it is. They don't quite know what to do with us.
Oh, interesting. Right. Yeah. So do you foresee a day? I do, certainly, where, you know, you'll be in some suburban strip mall and there'll be a Carvel and there'll be a Dairy Queen and nestled between will be this big pink bombshell of an ice cream shop.
Or what? Instead, what I'd really like to do is have roadside dives, you know, and... I always joked about having a hot dog truck called Big Gay Wieners, which then we also tried to name Wiener Explosion.
That's going to be harder to get people to eat. Somehow, ice cream cone.
But I love the idea of sort of reinventing Dairy Queen's menu, you know, and doing soft serve and doing great hot dogs, you know. And
specifically, the roadside approach to it, because that was both of our ice cream experiences growing up. Uh-huh.
We went to the Tasty Freeze.
The Tasty Freeze and sat at picnic tables. You know.
Right.
We didn't go and get scooped gelato, or you know, that wasn't our upper.
Right. That wasn't your
the
heritage.
Tasty Freeze in my town in Pittsfield, Maine was settled in a midpoint on a hill. Next to it was a chicken coop. Then the Tasty Freeze down probably 30 feet, and then a little lower than that was a cow field. So you had to figure out which way the wind was blowing before you went to the Tasty Freeze, because you could really be suffocated.
Well, we've been talking with the real Dairy Queens, Doug Quint and Brian Petroff, owners of Big Gay Ice Cream, the truck and the shop on East 7th Street in Manhattan, where you can go have fun and a delicious and creative and sometimes surprising flavor sensation on a cone. This is Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. We're here every Wednesday at 11 o'clock. Next week, we'll be talking to Barbara Kirshenblatt-Gimlet. It's a shame she isn't here for this conversation, because she's all about the performativity of taste. And we're going to... she's a wonderful professor and a mentor of many of the people engaged in this radio project, but also... right now working on a new Jewish museum in Poland, and we're going to hear all sorts of interesting things about taste and the performance of nostalgia and food from BKG, as she's known among her friends, next week. Until then, you can listen to this show on the heritageradionetwork.com and also download the podcasts on iTunes. Thanks.
ビのボリューム下げて私嘘みたいな声で
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.